Imagine you've got $500 million in your Dow treasury, and you've got to decide which L2 you're going to build on. Well, that's exactly what ApeCoin Dow did this week. And the votes are in. We're going to tell you which chain they chose, along with so much more in today's episode. GM, GM, welcome to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. We are here to make sense of an on-chain world in constant transformation. I'm Jay Bird, along with my co-host, Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that pennies on-chain are going to change the world.
So much happening this week. Solana Sega sells out their pre-orders at 100,000 phones. This is a big deal, but that's actually not the biggest deal. We're going to talk about a tweet that Anatoly put out about the $45 million that they made off of these phones. It's not profit, so they didn't actually make that. But around the transaction fees that are associated with that, we're going to break down why crypto is so damn amazing. Speaking of pennies, we'll talk about Coinbase and their new marketing campaign, of course. Blast, the next big thing on Ethereum and in crypto. We'll talk about that. There's a big scam that you need to be aware of. It actually wasn't a scam, but we thought it was. And then now it actually might be. So like, just there's a lot going on. One of the biggest airdrops to happen in the industry just happened. Starknet. We're going to cover a bunch there because there's so much weird stuff happening in that world. It's a pretty controversial airdrop, to say the least. And then, of course, as per usual, we have a bunch of agree disagrees, as well as a market watch section. And markets, if you didn't know, are pumping. So we're going to talk about why and what the heck we think about what's going on there. But before we do, deep breath, as always, Jay, what is your gratitude today?
I like how you apologize for calling me Jason. You can call me Jason. It is my legal name, although no one calls me it anymore. I am grateful for Valentine's Day. I can't believe I'm saying this. I now understand.
Okay, wait. Last week you were grateful for Taylor Swift. This week you're grateful for Valentine's Day.
Sure, what is on the record? This is, man, wait until you have a kid. This is what happens to you, okay? You have a kid and all of a sudden you don't get date night. You don't get to hang out with your partner very often, like just the two of you, because literally your entire life becomes your child. And Sam and I got to go on a date last night because it was Valentine's Day. I planned it in advance and we got a babysitter. And so I am grateful that I had an excuse to hang out one-on-one with my beautiful wife, Sam, who I love so much. And yeah, just have a great date night. It feels like such a treat when you have an 8-month-old.
That's amazing. My gratitude, a little bit different as per usual. My Valentine's Day, which I'm also grateful for, but was a little bit different. I woke up in Chile and I fell asleep in Rio de Janeiro. So we woke up, we packed up, we headed on the plane and we flew over to Brazil. And so now we are in Brazil for Carnival. It's actually the tail end of Carnival. So we're actually not in the crazy part of it all, though I think there's like one day left. So we'll experience it over the weekend, which is cool. One of the biggest parties in the world. But either way, we are in Rio de Janeiro. I'm currently in on Copacabana Beach in our hotel. Well, actually in the Web3 Academy Brazil office, as you can see in the background here if you're watching. And Rio de Janeiro is a place that I have wanted to go to almost my entire life. I've always wanted to see this beach and just like the skyline of all the buildings across the beach. And unfortunately, we flew in last night, so I didn't get to see it. It was dark. And then I went upstairs this morning to the pool at the top of our hotel, and it's raining and cloudy and foggy. So I still haven't seen it. So I'm hoping that by the time we finish this podcast, I'll get to see that. But either way, grateful to be here in Rio.
I think we should do a poll of whose life are you more jealous of? I already know the answer, Jay or Kyle. Most people are going to be more jealous of you because you live this nomadic, travel, amazing lifestyle.
But I live in Whistler.
That's one of the best places. True. Well, we just have such different lifestyles these days. It would be great to ask our audience what they think. On the note of a poll, though, that is not today's poll. Today's poll is all about social cues. We're going to tell you what it is in a second. But before we get into that and Market Watch, if you aren't subscribed to our newsletter, you're going to want to subscribe because we make sure that you guys are up to date every week on all the current news. So go down to the show notes, hit subscribe for our newsletter. And you know what? If you got a second while you're listening to the podcast, please give us a like, give us a review on whatever platform you're on. It makes a big difference for us to get in front of more people. On that note, let's go over to what is going on in the markets this week, starting off with Bitcoin. Kai, what happened with Bitcoin this week?
It's been just a wonderful week for crypto in general, but Bitcoin sitting at 324 American dollars. It's a wonderful thing. So on the day, we're up 1%. So another good day. But on the week, 18%. It's been a banger of a week. We were up 18%. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. It's a good time to be a Bitcoin holder, that's for sure.
Okay. Sounds great. What about Ether?
Even, well, I was going to say even better, but I guess technically on the week, it's not even better. But today, it's up 2%. It's sitting at $2,835. We are nearing that 3,000 mark that I've talked about previously. On the week, though, we were up 16.9, so 17%. On the week, it's been an amazing week for both of these assets.
Popping off, things are looking good. Let's go to Solana.
Solana is up 13% in the week, so it's lagging behind the majors, which we figured at some point this was going to happen. So it's lagging on the week. It's not lagging like if you look further back. So it's still doing really, really well, but down 2% on the day, up 13.25% on the week. It's sitting at $114.5, $0.6, I guess, for one SOL. So again, everything's pumping. Bags are looking good.
Amazing. Okay, last number we always look at, total crypto market cap.
Yeah, this is getting close to $2 trillion. Bitcoin actually hit $1 trillion itself. And now we have the total crypto market cap, which is at $1.9 trillion. So it's getting very close to $2 trillion, which is, I mean, it's becoming one of the bigger asset classes in the world. It's really, really exciting. My hope for this cycle, can we get to $10 trillion? I think so. That's the goal.
Wow.
That's the minimum goal, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is 5X from here. Sounds great for all of us and everybody listening. I'm sure you'd all be super pumped. Okay, great to hear about the prices. What's moving the markets this week, Kai? What are you seeing in the news that everybody should be paying attention to?
Yeah, the big thing, which I talked about in the Market Watch episode this week, is it's about these Bitcoin ETF flows. It's just surprising to the upside a lot. I can actually pull up this image here for anyone that's watching, and you can see the flows on a daily basis. On the on February 8th, 405 million. February 9th, 541 million. February 12th, 493 million. On the 13th, so 2 days ago now, $631 million in one day of inflows across across all the ETFs. And then yesterday, we were at $339 million. So just massive numbers. And I think after the first 2 weeks, people were like, we're not going to get the flows that we necessarily wanted. Or, I mean, we were always getting pretty good flows. We just were getting beaten out by these outflows of GBTC. That's died down a lot now. And so the inflows are just engulfing it. And they continue to say, we'll see how long this stays for. Like at some point, it's probably got to slow down. But these numbers are massive. And if this just continues to pick up, then the thing is, it's just like Grayscale and Fidelity, they need to buy like hundreds of millions of Bitcoin every single day. It's crazy. So there's just a lot of buy pressure on Bitcoin right now. And then the reason Ethereum's doing so good is obviously people are then going, well, if the flows are this good on Bitcoin, they're going to probably be something similar on Ethereum as well. So let's try to front run that opportunity, which is why we're seeing Ethereum sort of outpace Bitcoin a little bit here. It's all the flows right now, which is nice to see. Now, one thing that's interesting as we sit here above 50K, there's a tweet that was put out by Chris K, DeFi Donut, I guess is his name on Twitter. But anyway, we brought this pretty funny tweet. Well, interesting, not funny, but first time Bitcoin hit 50K, which I think was 2021, early days 2021, ETH was at $1,800. Today, when Bitcoin hit, so this was a couple days ago, he put this out on February 12th, when Bitcoin finally hit 50K again, Ethereum was at $2,650. So the trend here, the pattern is really, really nice to see, right? Over that last, since 2021, Ethereum has outperformed Bitcoin is what this is saying. If we look at Solana, which this guy didn't do, but if we did, it's even better. The last time that Bitcoin was at 50K, the first time that Bitcoin hit 50K, Solana was $10. $10. And now Solana is 115 or whatever I said. So the amount of growth, that outperformance that Solana's had is just nuts. Now, obviously it was a new coin at that time. So like it wasn't really a big thing. So it's exaggerated, but the growth is just absolutely absurd. What this begs the question to next, Jay, is where are we at in this cycle? We're a lot farther ahead than I think most people were expecting at this point in the cycle. It seems to be, you know, are we getting a little bit over our skis here, or what's kind of going on? Like, should we be getting ready to take some profits? This is the question I think people are seeing, because we tend to be a little bit farther than we thought. A bunch of people, and even me, over the last 2 weeks, kind of said, maybe we get a pullback, and it did the complete opposite. It's just been rocking up. So some people are speculating maybe this cycle is going to be shorter. Maybe it's the super cycle. Like, who really knows, right? And one thing that's really nice to look at here is up on the screen, I have the Wall Street cheat sheet, which is the psychology of a market cycle. It basically sort of walks you through what happens in any market cycle. It doesn't have to be just crypto. This happens all the time with real estate, with tech stocks, with tulips in the 1600s. Like, this is just how market cycles always work, which is based on human psychology. Humans are extremely greedy. And as prices go up, we get even more greedy and we take even more risk and we leverage. And then as prices go down, we get scared and anxious. And then we take our money out because we panic and we end up buying the top and selling the low, as most people, most mainstream people do. So we have different stages here in this cycle cheat sheet for those that can see it. Basically, we'll go from the bull market, or sorry, the bear market, and we'll go up from there. So there's the anger phase where you just ended from the peak top all the way down to the peak low, where you're sort of angry. Then you get kind of depression because it's been a long bear market. You're like, is this ever going to change? I think we had that in 2022. And then you start to get a rally. And they call this disbelief, where you're like, is this even real? Is it a sucker's rally? Like, what happens here? So you generally get a dip after that. After the disbelief, if it's a good asset and it continues to go back up, which we've seen this multiple times here in crypto, that recovery comes back and you start to see prices go up. And it's sort of like a hope rally where you're like, okay, you know what? Maybe this is possible. Maybe we are going to have another cycle. Maybe this is going to work out. And then after you have this sort of long recovery or accumulation phase where prices are just going up consistently, we start to go back into the like euphoric bull cycle that we had, like the mania cycle in 2021. It starts with some optimism going, okay, this cycle is actually real. It's happening. And then it's like belief. You're like, okay, I'm going to get fully invested now. And then it's like a thrill. You're like, oh, I'm going to buy more. I'm going to buy on margin. I'm going to leverage. And then it's euphoria where you're like, I'm an absolute genius, which is what everyone thought back in 2021. And then you start to see things dip, but you get complacent. You're like, ah, we probably just needed a cool off. We needed a dip. And you start buying and you start buying, but then it just starts going down and down and down. You get back into the anxiety and the denial and the panic phases that I talked about already. So Jay, where do you think we're at in this cycle currently?
This is the hard thing to tell. Like, I really felt like we were somewhere between hope and optimism early in the cycle right now. But with what's happening, I'm starting to question if we've jumped up to euphoria so quickly, because I did not anticipate these prices going in this direction. Where do you think we are?
I don't think we're in euphoria. I think euphoria, if you remember 2021, euphoria was nuts, right? Yeah. Like, you're living in a whole new world. You're buying things. Would you buy a NFT for, what was it, like 30 grand or whatever you bought?
Yeah,
that
definitely not.
Word for? Like, yeah, no, you're not there yet, right? You don't think that you're a genius yet. But in, I don't know, however long it takes, whatever, when you're in euphoria, it's pretty freaking apparent if you can get yourself out of that moment and like really look. We're not there. And we'll talk about some social cues in just a second, actually, which is what our poll is going to be. I kind of think we're just getting into optimism right now, where we're starting to feel like, okay, this thing is real. I don't think everyone's fully invested yet. There's leverage in the system, but not a lot. So I like, we're definitely not at the thrill stage. The other thing is, I just don't think that like retail and stuff is here. And like, those people will come in when we're at that belief stage. And we need to be past previous all-time highs before we get to that. So I think we still have a long ways to go. Now, when I say long ways, I don't know if that means by time frame or by price. Because like, there's a chance we just jump from 50 to freaking 150 in the next couple months, right? Like, probably that doesn't happen. I'm not euphoric, so I don't think that happens, but like, it could, right? Or it could take a year and a half for that to happen, right? So like, that's what I mean by a long ways to go, as I mean in price. But yeah, I think until we get past all-time highs and people really start coming in and we start to hear about crypto on the news and things, which we're getting a bit, but not much of, I don't think we're in that sort of euphoric or thrill stage. Maybe we're in the belief stage, but I don't even think we're in that yet. I think we still got a long ways to go.
It just feels so hard when you're in it to know where you are, because coming into this year, I think we all felt really good. December, January, the ETF. You and I have been talking about thinking that we would stay rather flat or maybe even have a pullback. And instead we've jumped another, 20-30% in the last few weeks alone.
Here's the thing to think about though. The ETF matters to us. Everyone listening to this podcast, we've been here through the bear market. We know all the little things that happen. We're so aware of it. And so it feels very exciting. It feels like a big deal. Go ask your parents. Go ask your friends. They have no idea that a Bitcoin ETF got approved. They don't know, right? They don't know that most of this stuff is happening still. They don't even know that Bitcoin is at 50,000. They don't have a clue. They're not even thinking about it. And they won't start thinking about it until we reach all-time highs or get really close to all-time highs. Like, it's just starting to creep its way into the mainstream. And so that's actually what I want to talk about. I have a pro report coming out next week where I talk about indicators that tell you where we're at in the cycle. And a lot of it is around like understanding when retail enters. Because what you want to know is, when does retail come back in? Retail always is the indicator that they're chasing. When you're at the top of the cycle, that's when retail comes in. Retail leaves at the bottom of the cycle, always. It's just how it works. It's what they do. It's people that just buy things based off the news, which is way too late, right? Like, we were buying the ETF stuff months and months and months ago. It wasn't in the news yet. It was like a potential it might happen, right? Now it's starting in the news, and now people are starting to buy it, going, oh, there's an ETF. Bitcoin's probably going to go up, right? It's like, dude, we knew about this months ago. So you got to follow where retail goes. And so one of the things is, like, there's a lot of indicators I'm going to show in this pro report. I think I got like 20 charts or something. But at the end, I was like, you know what? There's another thing you can do, which is just look at social cues in your day in, day out life. Just like, things will change in your daily life and you'll notice. You'll be like, oh, you know what? I bet you all the indicators are popping off right now because of this just happened. So Jay, let's talk about a few of these that we experienced last cycle. And so again, these are not tangible things. These are just like things that just happen in life. So like an example would be Uber drivers start shilling you crypto, right? This happens all the time. You'd be in your taxi or Uber, and like an Uber driver's probably not a good investor. You never know. Maybe they are. You never really know. But like, if they're all of a sudden shilling some random token, you're like, okay, things are getting a little bit heated here. Maybe we're at the top. The one other one I'll just explain, then Jay, I want to see if you got any, is if you're the person that's in crypto and your friends know you're in crypto, all of a sudden you're going to get a bunch of messages from friends and family like, should I buy? Should I buy Bitcoin? Should I buy Ethereum? And I haven't got any of those yet. Couple little ones, but these are people that are a little bit more into crypto. So, but not the ones where like they're just random left field. Should I get into it? And then the even bigger thing is when those people start saying, hey, should I buy this specific token? And they've done their research on some random shitcoin that you've never even heard of. That's when I'm like, okay, I'm out. I'm selling. This is like definitely the top. So those are two big social skills. Any that you have?
Yeah, well, it's funny. The one you just brought up, my stepdad, who is a very successful TradFi investor, asked me yesterday on a call what the Bitcoin halving is. And
interesting.
That was very much a cue for me. I would put him into the category of, he's very early. He's always been early in TradFi. So, and I've talked to him a lot about this stuff, and he's been thinking about it. I've been telling him to invest in Coinbase for over a year now, and he's coming around to that and starting to understand it more. So he's not
after it's 10x's or whatever it's done.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, he's not the top signal, but that's definitely a social cue. The fact that he knows what the halving is, or is trying to figure out what the halving is. I think the other one that really cues for me is when celebrities, mainstream media start popping off. So you're watching Saturday Night Live and it's all crypto. You're seeing celebrities, you know, shilling tokens, and a lot of celebrities getting involved in projects, right? You're seeing commercials on the Super Bowl. This year on the Super Bowl, there was zero crypto commercials. Last year, or what, not last year, when was it? 2021, there was 5, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think last year there was 2, or there, I think maybe 2 years ago there was 2. So I think that's all the mainstream media impact is really a social cue as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you the worst one. When people start getting tattoos of like logos of crypto tokens, that's when you need to be running away. Anyway, we've got a bunch more in our report. And if you guys have any that you noticed last cycle or that you've just heard of, please share them in the comments. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can share it in the comments there. If you're listening on Spotify, there's also a place where you can write in there as well. Let us know the social cues that you're eyeing. We just want to make sure we're all on the same page and keep an eye on that.
All right, let's jump into the top stories of the week. And the first one on the docket today is ApeCoin's vote for which chain they are going to build AppChain on. Give you a little refresher and background here. So ApeCoin is Yuga's ecosystem token. It was airdropped to their holders back in March of 2022. The token is used in a bunch of games. It's used in Dookie Das, Legends of Mara. There's a partnership with Gucci where they accept ApeCoin in Gucci stores. And basically, as ApeCoin DAO has continued to grow, they have said, okay, we don't want to be on Ethereum L1 where they are right now. It's cost prohibitive, and we want to be able to scale. So the DAO decided we need to create our own chain, which is going to be called ApeChain. And a few weeks ago, a vote passed to do this, that we need to create our own chain. That vote passed. Then after that, a vote was started to decide which chain stack should we build upon. And that was between
four options: Arbitrum, Polygon, A-Team, which we build on Optimism, and Matter, which is ZK Sync. This is now finished. The vote is complete, and the winner is Arbitrum. Arbitrum won with 50% of the vote. Then we had Polygon with 32%, Optimism with 11%, and ZK Sync with 6%. Kai, what do you think about this choice here between these options? Is this a signal that we should be paying attention to for either the price action of any of these chains or the long-term potential?
I don't know necessarily about the price action. I actually haven't looked to see if it mattered based on this decision. So what L2s want is activity, right? They need lots of transactions on top of their chain. That's how they make their money. And I mean, I don't know that AppChain necessarily does that yet. They have a bunch of liquidity. They have some devs. They're obviously a team that can ship some stuff, but they're still fairly new. I don't really know what they're going to do yet. But I mean, if they bring a bunch of games over to Arbitrum, that's really cool. So I think it's a signal definitely that, hey, Arbitrum's got some good technology. They obviously have something going for it if they were able to beat, you know, Polygon. I mean, ZK Sync is still fairly new. Optimism is a big deal. I don't know what A-Team is, by the way. I think it's just a big signal that, hey, I mean, I'm seeing more and more. I think Rari Chain launched just the other day. We talked about last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, and they also launched on top of the Arbitrum stack. So, you know, it's a very competitive environment right now amongst these L2s, specifically Polygon, Arbitrum, Optimism. And, you know, there's a bunch of other long tail ones as well, but those are the three main ones. Yeah, Arbitrum's starting to build up. I remember like a couple months ago, we were like, you know, Optimism and the Polygon CDK, those are the two stacks that are getting all the teams and chains. And now Arbitrum seems to be firing back. So it's been interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was really cool to see this process that ApeCoin DAO took to make this decision. We're not used to seeing big decisions like this made in public. And usually these decisions will be made behind closed doors. But in this case, ApeCoin DAO, I mean, they're a DAO, so it's an open vote that anybody that holds ApeCoin can vote on. And you can go in, anybody can go in, you can see who voted on what. You can see that Mochaverse, for example, who holds, I think they hold about 5 million ApeCoin, they voted, 6 million ApeCoin, they voted for Polygon. So you can see, you know, where the connections are and where the partnerships are and who cares about who. The other thing that was really interesting was they hosted multiple Twitter spaces in the last week where founders and CEOs of Arbitrum or Horizon Labs and Optimism, actually wasn't Optimism, it was A-Team that was representing Optimism, which was Mackie Big Brother, one of the largest NFT traders. But they're all showing up to these Twitter spaces and talking in public about their proposals and debating with each other. And you wouldn't usually see that, like four CEOs showing up to an open debate about why their chain should be the chain to build on. Like, this is really shows the mantra of decentralization and the way we are changing the way we make decisions. It was also hilarious. In one of the Twitter spaces, Mackie Big Brother called one of the other CEOs a motherfucker. And like, what do you do if you're a CEO of, you know, a massive company like Arbitrum? You can't call somebody a motherfucker. So you can't respond and say that back to Mackie Big Brother. But you got to take a deep breath and not freak out and like stay calm. So it's so fascinating and exciting to see these decisions being made in public.
Twitter is the town hall, just like what Elon always wanted it to be.
That's right.
Interesting to see that all play out. But anyway, congrats to Arbitrum. It's a big deal.
Okay, next up from ETH L2s, let's go over to Solana. And the Solana saga had some news come out this week. What's going on here, Kai?
So Solana had 100,000 pre-orders out for, I think it was around $450 for the phone. They haven't made the phones yet, obviously, as a pre-order, but we weren't really sure if they would actually sell 100,000 of these. Remember, they didn't sell 20,000 in their first go until people realized they could get Bonk, which is like part of the airdrop that's just on the phone. Then it went nuts. So they were like, okay, we got some momentum back. Let's try to sell 100,000. And they did. And it took, I don't even know, what was it? Like, couldn't have been more than a month. Yeah, 30 days. 30 days to sell 100,000 phones. And they're actually past it now. So what the situation now is, like, the phone's gone up to 500 or 550. And so you can still buy, I think there's over 120,000 sales now, something like that. So pretty big deal. I think why this matters and what I think Solana's excited about is devs can now start to build applications that are specific for the Solana Saga phone, like mobile crypto apps that have no restrictions from the Apple Store, no restrictions from Google, and have native features right in the phone itself. They've never been able to do that. And so this like should open up an innovation
cycle that I'm pretty excited about. You couldn't do this before. There's just no phone existed. And also, like, sure, Solana had 10,000, but you weren't going to build your own app based on 10,000. But like 120,000, that's not bad. There's a bit of network effects there. That's big enough community or network that like you can start to build for it. And so it, look, it's small. There's not a lot of people talking about this. Sure, they're not going to beat Google or Apple anytime soon, but this is going to be really big, I think, for the industry. I'm excited to watch this all play out. Now, here's the coolest thing. This has nothing to do with the phone specifically, but Anatoly, who's the founder of Solana, tweeted this out. They sold the phone through Shopify, and Shopify has that ability to connect a wallet and pay with USDC. And they sold almost half of it through crypto and half of it through like credit card, right? And so $20 million in sales on phones from USDC, $20 million from credit cards. From those that bought with credit cards, Solana Mobile, the company that creates these, they had to pay, or they lost out on $600,000 in credit card fees, okay, on the $20 million in volume that they created. For the USDC side of things, zero fees. It was free for them. They paid nothing. So they made $600,000 more by using crypto than using credit card. That's three full-time engineers, is what Anatoly said. That is huge. That is so impactful on the economy and for businesses, like large businesses, small businesses. It's such a big deal. And I think this is the most bullish news that came out of this, because that's a case study that can now get shown to other businesses saying like, here's why you need to integrate USDC. I go to convenience stores all the time, or like smaller stores, especially around the world, where, I mean, in the US and Canada, you usually can use a credit card to buy like even something that's like a dollar. They don't really care anymore. They've kind of just said, screw it, we'll just put up with it. But around the world, like in Chile, where I just was, in Argentina, where I just was, like they usually have minimums. It's like, I mean, they used to do this like 10 years ago, if you remember when credit cards first became a thing. It was like you had to spend $5 or $10 at least to use a credit card. It's because they're getting charged like 30 cents plus 3% fee or whatever it is. So on a dollar, like that's, you know, 40% of your fee. It makes no sense. And so what this does is, if merchants now start to promote the use of stablecoins, USDC or whatever instead, they'll be the ones that can sort of push this happen. It won't be the users, because it doesn't impact us. I can use my credit card, or I can use USDC. It doesn't really matter once the app is good enough that it's, the tech is there where it's just seamless. But the merchants are really going to want you to use USDC. And I think that there is a potential that they start to push this. If we can get some biz devs to start going to these convenience stores and say, hey, stop pushing cash over credit card and instead push stablecoins, this is a way better deal. And it still allows people to have use technology, use their phones, because no one wants old cash. Like, I think this is going to be a thing that just really, really picks up in the coming months.
You know who else thinks this is going to be a thing is Coinbase, who came out with a new campaign this week called Mint a Penny. So there's shocking stats around the penny. And this is just in the US alone. I'm sure if you extend this to other countries who also have pennies. So $1.2 million worth of pennies go missing every year in the US. It costs 3 pennies in order to make just 1 penny. So it's actually a loss every time you make these. And what? The penny's been around for 167 years and has not been changed or updated since then. And Coinbase, rightfully so, thinks it's time to make that change by, you guessed it, using stable coins, as Kyle said, maybe at your local convenience store where you can use a stable coin and pay in pennies and not have to actually pull pennies out of your pocket. Who actually has pennies anymore? They're just collecting dust somewhere, I'm sure, in your house or in your kid's piggy bank.
Aren't pennies illegal in Canada now? Not illegal, but like you can't use them anymore, I'm pretty sure, in Canada, right?
Is that, I don't know.
I think this happened years ago. Like, you just, pennies don't count anymore, I'm pretty sure.
Remove them from circulation.
Yeah, exactly. So like, yeah, you can take them to the bank, but you can't, I don't think you can use them anymore. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But Coinbase Wallet and USDC have a nice connection. Yeah. And you have this seamless way of, you can go from credit card or bank or PayPal or whatever in Coinbase Wallet right to USDC on Solana or Layer 2s. And then you can purchase from there. It's very, very good. It's not perfect yet, but it's pretty good. And I think that they are going to start to push this further. We're just like, forget all the speculative things around crypto. Just use stable coins, because it's so much better. Why would you ever hold, like, traveling around from country to country is insane. Like, it sucks. I have to try to change money all around. Like, I get this change from people and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? I can't buy anything with this change. Why are you giving me this change? I'm just going to lose it. So I end up losing all my like change anyway. And then I got to go to the next country. And I'm like, well, shit, what am I going to do with these currency now? And I got to go back to the US dollars, then flip that into this one. It's like, man, if we just made this all digital, it's just so much easier. I think Coinbase is really going to nail this. I think they'll dive. I mean, you can already see they're doubling down on the stablecoin side of things. They're going to make the app that goes mainstream. And it's going to be around payments.
I completely agree. And if you agree as well, right now, you can participate in the Mint a Penny campaign. Just shout out to Coinbase's marketing team. They're just killing it. They killed it with On-Chain Summer. They killed it with the Crypto Shield. And here's their next big campaign. So you can go to mintapenny.xyz and you can mint a penny for free. It's actually a dynamic NFT, so it changes based upon when you mint it. It's been minted over 100,000 times now. And here's what you can do. Once you mint that penny, you can then go purchase a penny hat that Coinbase made, which is kind of a dope like hat. It's a black hat with a penny emblem on the front. It says, make it make sense on the back, which is their slogan for this campaign. And the hat costs $30. But if you mint the free NFT, then you can apply a token gated discount for $29.99, making the hat only cost one penny plus shipping. And shipping, I think, is like $10 in the US. So you are going to have to pay for shipping. And yeah, there you go. Great. A great campaign. Mint something for free. Show that you think that pennies should move on chain and be used as stable coins. And get a hat because you get token-gated access all in one. Boom.
Also, Coin is up 4% today and up 17% in the last 5 days. The thing is going to continue to be sitting at $167. And they have their earnings, which come out today as we record. So Thursday. So by Friday, when you're listening to this, you're going to know what they are. I got a feeling they're going to be very bullish. And I don't think Wall Street understands Coinbase still to this day. So I think they're going to surprise. But let's see what happens. It's going to be exciting.
All right, let's go from Coinbase, the new age finance crypto company, to a old credit card company, MasterCard, who is also on crypto and trying to get into Web3. MasterCard launched a new Web3 program this week called Priceless. It's actually called Pass to Priceless. And they did this in partnership with Champions League. Basically, what this is you can go to Priceless right now and you can mint a pass to one of their experiences. They're creating these digital experiences. So MasterCard has, their marketing really revolves around using your MasterCard at incredible experiences around the world, things that you wouldn't be able to do without a credit card. And one of those is Champions League is the largest football, if you're in Europe, soccer, if you're in North America, tournament in the world. It is happening right now. And if you go to priceless.com, connect your wallet, you mint this NFT. There's no mention of this being an NFT, by the way. This whole campaign from MasterCard is all about this is just digital experiences and you getting access to new things. You can participate in a trivia. And then by participating in the trivia, you can win tickets to matches. You can win tickets to the finals and a whole bunch of other things. So here we have MasterCard, which is jumping into Web3 in the loyalty space and the reward space, an area that we've talked a lot about being such a good use case for blockchain. We talked about Visa doing this about a month ago. They've launched a white label loyalty program, which brands can use to offer their customers on-chain rewards. Everybody is seeing that digital rewards make so much sense for better ways to engage your customers. And then you can offer all the physical rewards that you used to offer, but to a smaller select number of people, which costs you much less to do. Super exciting stuff out of MasterCard. Love to see it.
Abstract away the chain. That is the key. We must abstract away the chain. Thank you, MasterCard.
Okay.
All right.
From MasterCard, let's hop over to Blast, an L2 that is continuing to get tons of hype. What happened with Blast this week, Kai?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously a lot of controversy around Blast because of the way that they launched. They launched with a blast, which was almost $1 billion in TVL within like a couple days, pretty much. But they ended up being just more like a multi-sig. They weren't even an actual L2. So people didn't necessarily love the way that they did that launch. They didn't lie to people, but they didn't necessarily explain the risks associated with what they were doing. Anyway, regardless, they're gaining a ton of traction, which is because they have 1.6 billion in TVL and over 132,000 people that, well, wallets that have bridged. Doesn't mean it's people. But anyway, teams really want that. They want to access that capital. They want to access those users. And you know what? I think they probably just believe in the vision of what this team has done, because they, I would say they killed it with Blur, and now they're trying to do it again with Blast. And they did basically a competition amongst developer teams to get grants and get more of the tokens, the Blast tokens that will be coming out. And in this competition called the Big Bang Competition, they had 3,000 teams that registered. 3,000. That is 3,000 teams. Part of that was like existing teams that are on other chains are like, hey, we want to go over here and we can build it on there and then we'll get some free money. So like, it's not 3,000 new developer teams by any means. There are a bunch that come from other chains just trying to get grants across chains, which is whatever. It is what it is, how you get your funding right now. But there are a bunch of them that they've said that are also just brand new teams that have never built before. And they're building some really interesting, different things. And so, again, we don't know the end result of this. When does it end? The deadline is February 16th. What is that? Today is the 15th. So the deadline will be tomorrow or the day that you guys listen to this. And then we will get more details on who wins this. So we should find out soon. And then Blast is supposed to launch, I believe, in March. So we're getting closer to it. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to see these guys launch. I think they're going to bring just a lot of hype into the space and a lot of innovation into the L2 space. And hopefully, out of these 3,000 teams, at least one of them does something really cool. We'll find out, though.
I just hope they don't nuke a market like they did with the NFT market.
That was nuking anyway. It was going to nuke anyway. They just accelerated it.
All right, let's go to a scam that we want to let all of you guys know about, because we're always trying to keep everybody safe. This scam was made aware to us by Hayden Adams, the founder of Uniswap. He posted this week on Twitter that this was the first time he had seen this scam. So somebody bought his Ethereum address, 0x11, you know, et cetera, .eth. So they took his Ethereum address and bought the .eth with his Ethereum address in front. So when you paste his address into some UIs, some wallet UIs, they don't match his Ethereum address. They match the ENS, which has his wallet address in it. This is very tricky and very smart. So this is a scam where you could buy a popular, like somebody like Hayden Adams, who you know people are sending him a lot of money. You buy that ENS, and then by accident, somebody sends the scammer the money instead of sending it to the right source. We pay a lot of our employees this way, so I'm now going to pay attention to this. And the reason that this is an issue is because a lot of these wallet UIs don't know to filter out the ENS if the ENS matches.
Well, they usually show the ENS first, right? Because it's the more readable version. So when you put in a letter, they want to show the ENS because it's just better for most users.
Now, what happened was Hinaz tweeted this out and then quickly followed up a day later with saying the owner who purchased this ENS address was actually not a scammer. They were not trying to scam anyone here. They were purchasing it just for provenance because they are a big fan of Uniswap, big fan of Hayden Adams, and they thought this might be a collectible someday. And they didn't realize the UI implications. So they actually DM'd Hayden Adams. They offered to send him the ENS. They said, I don't want this. I don't want to be a part of this scam. I'll send this to you. You can have it. But now all the scammers are aware of this scam. So watch out when you enter wallet addresses, pay extra attention and make sure that you're not actually sending it to an ENS, that you're sending it to the correct wallet address.
Yeah, the key thing to look for, if you scroll down just a little bit, Jay, when it shows the ENS, the nice thing about these is it always, every time there's a .eth name, it always shows the actual wallet underneath, but it shows the first five letters and the last five letters. And so you can see the first five letters right there in the .eth, and you can see the first five letters of the wallet itself, and they're different. And so you already know right off the bat, this isn't the same. You can also then scroll over and look at the end and see they're not the same as well. It is right in front of your eyes. You just like, you got to know to look at it, which most people wouldn't. And I just, we've never really heard this before, but people are going to do this now. Like, this guy's sending all the ENSs back because he's a good person. There are many not good people out there. And so I think the next bull market in crypto is probably going to be wallet ENSs because all this. Not funny. Don't get tricked by that.
Please, please don't. Okay, it's time to airdrop them like it's hot. Starting off with a massive airdrop this week from Starknet and some controversy as well. Kai, bring us up to speed on the Starknet airdrop.
Yeah, so Starknet is an L2 that has been long been waiting for this token to launch. Starknet's been around for a long time. There's a layer 2 that uses ZK. So something that we've all been wanting. It is an incredible technology. And this has been like one of the longest waited tokens because they announced that they were going to launch this token for forever ago. Finally, they are launching it on February 20th is when you'll be able to claim it. You can already look and see if you're eligible and see how much you have. You can just go to Starknet Foundation on their Twitter. It's Starknet, FNDN, by the way. And you can see it there. This is dropping. So they're dropping 700 million Stark tokens, STRK, to nearly 1.3 million addresses. So this is huge. This is bigger than the Jupiter one that just went. So it is a really big deal. Now, there's a lot of controversy around this one, actually. So I want to start this off by saying the team itself is, at least as far as we know, is a really good team. They've done some amazing things for innovation in the space, but there's just a lot of weird things that they did. So to summarize it first, there's a lot of people that have been farming this airdrop for a long time. And what they did is they actually really changed who these tokens were going to go to and favored developers instead of users, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I actually have a thing in agree, disagree to talk further on this subject at the end. There was a lot of people that were pissed off because they didn't get tokens, even though they were farming it, which like if you were farming something, you probably shouldn't get tokens anyway. So like, I don't really sympathize for those people. Unfortunately, some of the team at Starknet doesn't sympathize for them either and probably isn't going about it the right way. But anyway, before we get into that stuff, because there's some crazy things going on in that world, just looking at the tokenomics themselves is a little bit weird. Here's Taike, I'm not sure how to say his name, pretty big Twitter account though, and he just tweets out, looks like Starknet hired SBF as a consultant for Stark tokenomics because it's a bit messy. So first of all, they're dropping such a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of tokens that are going to be available early on. So that'll really skyrocket the FTV and the market cap of this token. So it's a bit of like it's fine. It doesn't really hurt anyone, but it just kind of is a scammy way to make your token look like it's more valuable than it is. It's good for like investors and stuff, but they're doing it the weirdest we've seen in a long time. But what's really weird about this is usually when you drop tokens, it goes to the community, and then you have like a year or 2 years usually until the like founders and the team and the investors can put their tokens on the market. So usually they're like vested for 2 years. But for whatever reason, these investors and others were given this token like a year and a half ago. And so the 2 hour vesting period that they did have is up in like 2 months, not even 2 months. So all of a sudden, 15% of the total supply is going to be on the market 2 months from now. So like the community gets their tokens and then they're just going to get dumped on in like a month. It's very weird setup that they're doing here. We haven't really seen much of this before. So definitely don't love that. But then as per usual, a bunch of the people that were farming the airdrop have been complaining because they're not getting any tokens, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm not sure who he is, abdel.stark.eth. I don't know if he's, I gotta actually just look who this guy is because I don't think he's a founder, but I think he's definitely part of the community. Here it is here. Let me just check here. Head of ecosystem at Starkware. Okay, so not a founder, but head of ecosystem. He tweets out and says, A, we don't owe you anything. B, no one asked you to do anything. C, we care about community much more than you think. D, we are here for the long run. If you don't understand this, go farm useless bullshit projects. There are plenty of those. Part of me is like, completely agree. You're 100% right. But also, you're the head of the ecosystem. Is this really what you want to do to all your users? I get, well, let's do the dev user airdrop thing. We'll talk about that more later. But a little bit aggressive. Now look what happens. Let's go to the next tweet. So this was the same guy or girl. And in Telegram, maybe this is, or WhatsApp. And if you want to just click on those pictures there, this is like their community group or whatever. And he's basically saying this. He's like, for example, it's absolutely 100% clear that Linea bought followers and it's 95% artificial. Even more probably, I think we're the most honest, this kind of things. We did not promise anything. We were patiently building for years. So he's like, he's fighting with users in this Telegram and telling them, what's wrong with you? You really think I'm the one to blame here? You lost your soul to earn some buckets of money. You have the impression that people working hard for years owe you anything. Let me laugh. To all of you who have any issue, please just go away. Like he says, oh, there's someone else saying cry harder. But anyway, he's in this group fighting with users, which is like, look,
what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you? You're head of ecosystem. Like,
you can't do this.
It just makes no sense. Look, it is very frustrating. The people that do expect money, but there's just a different way to go about it. Supposedly this Telegram group has now been shut down.
This reminds me of Doodles and how Poopy lost it one day. And look, there's a lot of pressures. If you're a founder or you're a builder in this space, it is ridiculous the amount of pressures that communities have. The joke always was that if you're a founder in crypto, it's like being the founder of a public company and the founder of a startup at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Which would absolutely suck. Like, that's so much pressure from so many angles. But you cannot lose your cool publicly like this. You just can't. Like, go yell at a wall or yell into a pillow or whatever. I don't know, take a baseball bat to a tree, but do not do this publicly.
All right, we'll talk more about this and later in the agree disagree, because there's another story there. But what also has happened here is, unfortunately, for those that are in America, you are not eligible for this Starknet airdrop. You in America, along with Russia, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, and Syria. US fits right along in with those countries, which is just, it's wild, but that's what Gary Gensler and the SEC has caused. But not only that, there's been a little bit of drama in the airdrop world. Ether5, we've been covering this one a lot. We think it's one of the top airdrops, along with EigenLayer. Out of nowhere, Americans just all of a sudden were not able to access the site anymore. All the points that they had that they've been getting, they can't get those points anymore. They're just gone. And all of a sudden, they're just not allowed to use the platform. I don't even know. I think they're able to move their assets off, of course. Otherwise, that'd be crazy. Otherwise, though, Americans are no longer available for the Ether5 airdrop. And it's not even just them. There's Puffer Finance, which is another one that is coming. They are also geo-blocking in the US. And AltLayer, which dropped a week or two ago, they didn't allow US participants either. So Gary Gensler just causing problems in the airdrop world. By the way, if you just use a VPN, you can use the app still. And so it's all good. If you still want to use Ether5, just throw down a VPN. You're fine. But sucks.
It's exciting to see Starknet. I think, like, I've been a fan of the team behind this project for a while, but definitely the way that they're handling this current situation is not the right way. We'll talk about that more. Let's go to, we got a few more quick airdrops to let you guys know about, not as big as Starknet by any means, but ones you can get involved in right now. One is AI Arena. This is a really cool game that combines blockchain and AI. We actually had founders on the podcast about a year ago, and they are right now coming out of beta. And in order to come out of beta, they want a whole bunch of users to come and stress test their platform first. So right now you can participate in what they're calling a play to airdrop campaign, where if you play, you can earn points, and there's 40 million neurons, which is their token that they're going to be airdropping in the next few months. And you'll be able to get access to that airdrop by playing. We'll throw a link in the show notes for those who want to take a look at this.
Sounds fun. We got some more coming up here. So these are just some smaller ones, but if you care, and if you're following our guides on the Injective or the Cosmos ones, a bunch of those are coming into fruition now. Talos Protocol, which we talked about in our guide, there you can now see if you're eligible for their airdrop. They are dropping their token. It's an NFT marketplace, by the way. They also run a validator for Injective. And if you use the marketplace or you use their validator, delegated your stake with their validator, you're getting tokens. I don't think it's a big one, but you will get something nonetheless. Hydro Protocol, which is another one on top of Injective, they just launched their mainnet on February 1st, and they've started their points program. This one, I don't believe, was in our guide because, well, it just came out. But now they've started a points program. So if you go to their site, you can check out how to get that airdrop. And the last one, which was one that we talked about in our guide, which is Milky Way. And they have now announced their points program as well. So you can go check out Milky Way. This is on the Cosmos ecosystem, and you can work on getting their airdrop as well. So again, I'm not sure any of these will be like massive, like some of the Solana ones and the EigenLayer one that I think is coming, but it doesn't hurt. If you already own Cosmos and Injective and you're on there, you might as well go do them.
It's time for our favorite segment of the week, Agree, Disagree, where we go through some hot takes and opinions from Twitter, and we break them down for you and let you know our opinion. First up on the docket, we got Edgy, the DeFi Edge. He says, overwhelmed, focus on three narratives. Don't know when to buy, DCA every month. Don't know when to take profits, sell half at 2x. Simplify, then optimize. Most people complicate things and mindfuck themselves out of taking action.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. A lot of the pro reports that I wrote around like investing strategy were all about just building a plan, simplifying that plan, and not doing much. You don't need to do much to make money in crypto. It does it all for you, right?
we're up 20% in the last like 5 days or whatever it is in a lot of these tokens. So like, and that's in the least riskiest tokens. And so you don't have to do much to make money in this. And in fact, the more that you do, the bigger the chances that you're going to fuck it up. So don't do much. Just like build your conviction. And honestly, the more tokens you have, the more chance you're going to fuck it up. So like, limit the amount you're buying. Don't be trading a bunch. And like, what he said of like dollar cost average every month and just like sell at a certain number regardless, that just takes all the noise out of it and allows you to just like execute, just follow the plan. We have tons of pro reports talking about this. When you sign up to our newsletter, we actually have an investing guide that you'll get right off the bat. And it shows you all these reports and walks you through the exact strategy you need for the cycle. Check that out. Couldn't agree more though. Simplify what you do. If you find you're just trying to follow every narrative and buy every token and you're trading like crazy, stop. You're going to fuck this up.
Next up, we got Deebs DeFi. They say you can make life-changing wealth this cycle just on airdrops alone. And that is absolutely nuts. Show me another industry where that is possible, only in crypto.
Yeah, I mean, like, so there were airdrops last cycle and people made really good money on them. But last cycle, we didn't know when we were getting an airdrop, right? Like when Uniswap came, it was the first one ever. So no one had any idea airdrop was even a thing. When like the ENS one came, which a lot of us made like 10 grand off of, it was like, we didn't know they were going to do this. It just kind of came out of nowhere. There was a bunch that happened, not a ton, but like there was a few that happened and you had no idea. Now you actually know, like you just go do it and they're like, hey, we're doing a points program. You're going to get an airdrop. Just go play around on our shit, put some liquidity there. And so like, it's so easy and so obvious. Why not do it? You know? And here's the thing. I know airdrops, when they first came out, people were like, ah, this is a little bit weird. And now people farming, they're like, ah, it's a bit scammy, blah, blah. But the thing is, it really helps teams. Teams need to, one, get their liquidity out there. And they need a bunch of people to have that for it to be like distributed liquidity. They can't just put it in one wallet. They've got to try to get it into hundreds of thousands. They need to stress test their protocols, like you just said with AI Arena. It is a marketing tool as well, sure. But there's more to it than just that. And so like, you're helping them by doing this and you're just getting rewarded for it. And so like, why would you not do this right now? And he's right. This doesn't happen in any other industry. And I don't know that this continues for forever. Like this feels like one of those moments where like this year is a massive opportunity on these things. And there's a lot of non-risky ways to do it. Like staking your Injective in Injective validators, there's no additional risk to that than holding Injective. It's not like you're going and putting in a million different DeFi protocols. If you're doing that, there's a lot of risk. But like you can just add your ETH into Eigenlayer and boom, all of a sudden you're eligible for a bunch of other airdrops. You just stake your SOL in Jito and same thing. There's a lot of low risk opportunities here to make a lot of money. And it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how whenever there's new ways to create capital formation, there's this natural feeling of it being a scam, right? Because everyone's like, whoa, how is it possible?
Because a lot of them are.
And a lot of them are, rightfully so. As a result of a new way to make capital formation, we are also creating new ways for teams to build without having to go through the old way of VC funding. We are creating new ways to build with community in decentralized ways. So yeah, there's a big opportunity to make life-changing money, but there's also this trend of new capital formation that was not possible before crypto that I think is a much bigger narrative that's going to come out in the next few years that is not just about life-changing money. It's also about enabling the little guys and anybody around the world, not who is in San Francisco or Silicon Valley and has access to VCs and knows how to make a good pitch deck, but just somebody who actually has a good idea and can build a community and get the right people behind it. Now you can build a company. So I get so fired up about the future of this, not just for the purpose of let's all make a bunch of money, but I will also agree, this is the year to get involved in airdrops because there's just money on the table that you might as well take. Okay, next up, we got Jack Niewold. I can never pronounce his last name. He says, the problem with Starknet is that they didn't realize distribution to the masses is actually good. Tia, Bonk, and Dim all got it right. Use a percentage of your supply to create an army of people willing to shill bags on your behalf. Distribution to retail/retail+ isn't bearish, it's bullish.
I actually agree with this a lot. The purpose of an L2 right now is not really, it is to get some users, but it's more to get developers because the L2s, the way that they're going to exceed is by getting developers to build cool applications that will then bring over the users, right? So I think that's what Starknet was thinking here is like, hey, let's just get all the devs pumped up and get them over here. And so like they really favor them, which is great. Devs deserve it. We'll see if this works. We haven't really seen a team do this previously. Does it really bring a bunch more devs over? I'm not sure, but let's see. I do think there is this, like, look at Blast. Why is Blast get 3,000 teams signing up for its competition? Well, it's because it's got a bunch of users and a shit ton of liquidity. And Starknet now just pushed their user base. Now, this was going to happen regardless, but I'm not sure how much this is because of this, but their users went from like 250,000, I think, is a day to 60,000 right after they showed eligibility. And that's because you can't farm it anymore. So obviously all the bots turn off. But I wonder how many users are just like, ah, fuck it, I'm out of here anyway, I'm not going to stay. Whereas, like, I don't know, you put some assets on Manta and some people are like, oh, you know what, my assets are there, I'll stick around, I'll use some of the stuff on Manta. But now do these users just kind of leave and they go elsewhere? Because, like, you know what, I never got a token, not really super happy. And again, if you're going to do this, you might as well try to get it as broad as you can and get as many people to see this token. Because the moment I sell my token of whatever that is, I'm always going to remember that token, that brand. But if I didn't get it in my wallet, it's gone. I don't think about it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that's a really big deal. You want people to associate your brand. The first time they ever associated with you is where they made some money. Like, brands don't usually get to do that. It's usually they have to buy something. And this way you get to go, hey, there's $500, $1,000, whatever. Like, that's really good for your brand. And they just basically were like, we're not going to do that. So we'll see if it works. But I agree with Jack on this one.
I'm with you. I agree as well. Okay, next up, we got one that was confused a bunch of people this week. That is, Joe Biden tweeted, just like we drew it up, with a photo of himself with the laser eyes, the Bitcoin laser eyes. So we got to explain this one, Kai, because I don't think this is an agree disagree. You can't agree or disagree with, I mean, I guess you could agree that, yeah, Joe Biden, great for you supporting Bitcoin. But was Joe Biden saying that he supports Bitcoin with this? Because here's the weird thing. This tweet came out right after the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl. So this was actually, the speculation is that this was him saying, just like we drew it up, kind of a sports terminology, because you draw plays in football, and then posting this laser eye photo as if he's saying, yeah, I wanted the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
Well, you just stole the thunder from me, but yes, that is the situation. It was not a Bitcoin laser eyes like everyone thought. Everyone on crypto Twitter went nuts, started retweeting this, like, oh my God, Joe Biden's bullish on Bitcoin. I was like, there's just no way that this is the case. Turns out it is not that. It is just, I'm not sure if he's a Kansas City fan or what, but he posted this because it's a Kansas City thing for the Chiefs. And so I guess he was supporting KC for whatever reason.
The best thing I saw was somebody speculating that this is connected to him sending a signal to Taylor Swift, and she is going to in turn come out and say that she supports Biden for the next presidency, which I was like, that is conspiracy theory to the absolute max.
Yeah, people love that stuff.
A lot that. Okay, next up, we've got Will Clement saying, the story of Bitcoin is so incredible. 0 to 1 trillion in 15 years. The only asset in history where retail was able to get the cost basis low for years and front run billions of institutional capital.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree for the most part. There definitely was 15 years for anyone to buy this. Usually you don't get this, right? Like, if you think of Apple and every company that exists, you couldn't get in early, right? Unless you, I don't know, started the company or you were an accredited investor or whatever, somehow you got in. But most people can't. You have to be an accredited investor to get in on these. And it's usually sticks to like hedge funds and certain other firms that can get into most of these companies early days. Once it IPOs, okay, you can buy it. But by the time you can buy a tech stock that's IPO'd, like, okay, it's pretty damn late at that point. I guess gold, you could have done this. It's like, there's one and it is a $13 trillion asset. So like, maybe he's not completely right on that, but like most random like retail people were not buying gold. And it's also quite a difficult thing to buy and hold. You would have had to use someone else. And most people waited till the ETF. And at that point, it was a bit too late. So I sort of agree. The only thing I would say is, I don't think retail did as good as they should have done, because many of them got bumped off along the way with each cycle. Retail tends to buy the top, sell the bottom. I know so many people that did it last cycle and the cycle before that. And so most people that I speak to that have bought crypto, they actually lost crypto rather than made in crypto. So opportunity was there. Unfortunately, I would say a small percent actually profited from it. And I would say there are a bunch of institutions that did get in and have made incredible money from it. But the nice thing is the big institutions and a lot of them just have not been able to access it because of regulation. Mm-hmm. So like, we were given so many years. Now the ETF's passed, kind of missed your boat.
But you didn't miss the boat. It's still so early. It's still so early. Feel the FOMO. You have not missed out. Just as Kai said, keep it simple. Don't fuck yourself up. Who doesn't agree with this is Gary Gensler, who went on, I don't remember which, I think it was CNBC talk show this week, and flat out said that Bitcoin is not decentralized and continued to peddle his narrative around Bitcoin is only used by fraudsters and it's only used for scams and all this stuff. And it's just, Gary, like, take the L, man. Walk away.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone saw that clip. We're not going to play it, but we have it up there, or we don't have that tweet?
No, I don't have it, no.
Yeah, kudos to whoever the news anchor was that actually fought back with Gary and was like literally throwing jabs at him, not physically, but and was fighting with his opinion on Bitcoin. So that was really cool. They were sort of talking all over each other and it was a bit of a mess, but I didn't even, like, Gary's points didn't even make sense. It was a weird altercation.
Okay, last one of the week. A Ether rock sold this week for $740,000. This is truly breathtaking, Ark. I've got it up on screen here. I'm being totally sarcastic when I say that. It is literally a JPEG of a rock. Kai, do you have any idea why the heck this thing sold for $740,000?
Yeah, I mean, last cycle, these things, I think the board was like 1.5 million or maybe even more than that. It was, yeah, something, it was quite a bit. The reason this sells for this much, I mean, I would never do it. So I guess this is a disagree if that's even the question. But the reason it sells for this so much is it was one of the first NFTs, the collections that ever launched. So it was like right after CryptoPunks. So the reason CryptoPunks is the highest valued NFT in the world, or one of them anyway, the collection, is because they were first. And so they're the first sort of like PFP art type thing. So obviously they have that sort of like provenance. And so Etherrock, same sort of idea here, is it was like really, really early, one of the first art collections, although I don't know what art is. If this is art, it's a rock. So wild to me that people buy it, but like people that really care about the Ethereum community, they'll buy this stuff because this is relevant to the Ethereum world, which is why all art has value, right? If it's relevant to something you believe in and maybe it's first or it was whatever, then it has value.
And there's only 100 of these. So obviously the low supply is a big part of why these things are so valuable, even though, as you said, it's definitely not art to me and it's definitely not art to you. Hopefully this is not a top signal. The last time Etherrock hit highs was actually at the start of the NFT bull cycle. So a lot of people speculating that this is the start of the NFT bull cycle, but I'd say it's too early to tell. It's also very difficult to predict this coming NFT cycle because we've only had one so far. So we don't really have patterns or trends off of more than one cycle to learn from. So by no means am I saying this is the start of the NFT bull cycle. We'll see how that all plays out. And yeah, congrats to, I think it was Justin Sun who bought this Etherrock for $750,000. Congrats, maybe? I don't know. I don't know if I would say congrats.
All right, that's a wrap on today's show. Kai, thanks so much for joining us from Rio. I hope you get to see the beach and the sun comes out for you in Carnival.
It looks like the sun might be peeking out right now. I can't tell for sure because I'm looking at another building through my window here, but it's definitely much brighter than when we first hit record, so that's exciting.
Well, on that note, everybody, get outside, touch some grass this weekend, take a deep breath. You know, week to week, we work and live in an exciting space that has so much potential, but it can also be stressful. So make sure you take a moment to yourself to just enjoy all the magic and wonder that is around you. We love you all. We thank you for listening in. We will see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe or follow so that you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, there's a link in the description for our free newsletter where we provide timely and relevant Web3 insights so you can confidently build and invest in Web3. Make sure to subscribe today. One final note. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto and Web3 are risky, and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and see you in the next one.